Support for the Something Wild podcast comes, as always, from you, our listeners and subscribers, and from Prescott Farm Environmental Education Center, exploring and preserving the natural world one adventure at a time. Open year-round with public programs, trails and natural playscape, vacation camps, and fledglings nature-based preschool. PrescottFarm.org.
So a common theme on Something Wild is breeding.
And that's why I always sip my tea with my pinky extended.
Oh, come on. Seriously, we're talking about how, when, and where.
Well, because there's a lot of different reproductive strategies that have evolved in nature.
And today on Something Wild...
Oh, this is Something Wild, by the way. I'm Dave Anderson from the Forest Society.
And I'm Chris Martin from New Hampshire Audubon. Today on Something Wild, we're looking at semilparity and iteroparity.
Wow, great spelling bee words. And these are... what, reproductive strategies?
That's right. A semilparous species reproduces just once in its lifetime, where an iteroparous species has multiple reproductive cycles.
All right, I'm just thinking. Semilparity seems like a pretty rare thing. Nature shows, this one included, are full of examples of breeding as a repeatable event. Moose in the fall rut, Phoebe's nesting twice a summer over your porch, even timber rattlesnakes giving birth to live young once every few years in their rocky dens.
That's right. Most vertebrates, mammals, birds, and reptiles, mate every year. But semilparity is fairly common among invertebrates. Most moths only breed once per lifetime. Same with a lot of other insects. They all follow basically the same pattern. Hatch, eat, pupate, emerge, breed, and die.
Well, I guess that's not a surprising strategy for species that are so short-lived.
But a long life doesn't necessarily mean a species will be iteroparous. Consider the agave.
Oh, right. That's a giant succulent plant in the Southwest, sometimes called the century plant, because it can live for decades before sending up a giant stalk and flowering.
And once it's done flowering?
It dies.
That's right. Like other semilparous species, it puts all its energy into ensuring the seeds of the next generation before perishing. Many common garden plants we know as annuals are also semilparous, setting seeds once, then dying off.
Well, all the Pacific salmon species are good examples. They spend between 1 and 5 years at sea before making a long and brutal journey upstream to spawn.
Lots of them die en route, and the ones that make it die shortly after spawning.
Well, what about closer to home? Is there anything like that happening around New Hampshire?
Like I said, lots of our insects are semilparous, but one of the better known examples is the cicada. Cicadas are famous for staying underground for years in larval form before emerging above ground by the millions as adults for a short mating period.
I think I remember someone telling me that we don't really have those kind of cicadas in New Hampshire.
No, our cicadas follow an annual cycle in much smaller numbers, but they follow that same pattern of emerge, breed, and die.
And so most vertebrates are not semilparous. They're, what did you call that again?
It's iteroparous.
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 They breed many times within their lifespan.
Usually every year, but there are lots of interesting exceptions and variations. Take, for example, the American shad.
So that's a fish, a vertebrate. Mm-hmm. Is it semilparous?
Well, American shad is one of the few species that's known to pursue both strategies.
How's that?
Well, southern populations spawn just once at the end of their lives, like Pacific salmon. But northern populations, some of which swim right through New Hampshire waters, survive the spawn and return to the sea to repeat the cycle.
That's wild. Which strategy is more successful over time?
Again, depends on your definition of success. If success is simply propagation of the species, well, then both are successful.
All right, then. What are the respective advantages and disadvantages of each?
Reproduction, in either case, demands a lot of energy. Semilparous species spend all, literally all their energy, in the fertilization stage, leaving the next generation to essentially fend for itself.
Talk about putting all your eggs in one basket. High risk and high reward.
No kidding. Many iteroparous species, humans included, devote some of their energy to raising the next generation.
And given the risks of reproductive failure, I suppose iteroparous species are also saving energy to try again next year if disaster strikes this year.
But those all-in semilparous species do tend to reproduce at exponentially higher levels, which, in their own way, also guards against disaster.
And speaking of disasters, we're almost over our allotted time.
Way over.
For Something Wild, I'm Dave Anderson.
And I'm Chris Martin. Something Wild is a joint production of New Hampshire Audubon, the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forests, and NHPR. A semelparous species reproduces just once in its lifetime.
I went to high school with a guy like that. Rim shot.
Spring is just about here, and Morning Edition is hitting the road. In our new weekly series, we're traveling across the Granite State to take you to new places and introduce you to new people.
Yeah, the moon looks very cinematic. What are we expecting to see tonight?
Now, people come here to see the alpacas.
Homebrewers starting out, how do you get from just whipping up batches in your basement to opening up your own tasting room?
Listen to Radio Field Trips, Morning Edition's new series about New Hampshire life and culture, Wednesday mornings from 5 to 9 on NHPR.